The following shir has been presented by Rav Baruch Rubanowitz, Dayan Beis Din Nesivos Chayim Yerushalayim, and has been brought to you by the Beis Avad Halacha Center.
The center can be reached for halachic services, consultations, and shilas at 888-485-VAAD or at thehalachacenter.org.
The Gemara in HaShoel, Tzarivav HaMabei, discusses the halacha of Takanas Usha. It's a powerful takana and has a number of practical applications. Although a man can write a will, a tzavah, and feel confident that if it's written halachically correctly, that it's going to be held up in a bezdin, and it will work, a married woman who writes a tzavah can only be 50% can rely on that tzavah that her wishes are going to be effective. Only should her husband die before her. Should she die before her husband, then Takonas Usha is going to uproot her tzavah. Recently, a pregnant woman asked me for some advice how to ensure that her assets should be transferred over to her child and fetus. She was 32 weeks pregnant and needed to undergo an operation. The doctor felt that there was a good chance of success and she should be able to continue her pregnancy to a natural delivery normally. However, the woman was very concerned and was afraid that she might die on the operating table. She had a 50% share in her home and had some other assets that she brought into the marriage and was concerned that should her husband inherit her, get remarried, start a new family, suddenly die, the children of her husband for the second marriage would be in a position to inherit all of her assets, which her husband inherited. She wanted to ensure that her two children, the son that she has now, a three-year-old boy, and the fetus that she's carrying, should be the sole inheritors of her 50% in the apartment and the other assets that she has. She did not want those to go to her husband's children from sons from a second marriage. Is there anything that can be done halachically to create a situation where she can ensure that? Well, if she writes a will and gives the assets to her son and her fetus, l'cha'ora, apparently they should acquire it. The way a tzavah works is that whatever assets the person owns at the time that they make the tzavah, the will, are transferred over to the designated person an hour before the person dies. Although we don't know when a person dies, we go back an hour from the time that the person dies, and we say that that is the time that the designated person acquired the assets as a gift. Once the person has it as a gift, at the time that the death arrives, the true inheritor is not in a position to inherit those assets because they've already been given away. A kinyan can easily be done for her son. Another individual, a zocha, would make a kinyan from the mother, from the woman, on behalf of her child, and he is then kona those assets. Her fetus is a bit more tricky, because l'cha'ora, apparently he is a davar shelo bala olam, or she is a davar shelo bala olam, and how could they acquire it? In Siman Reish Yud and Choshe Mishpat, the Shulchan Aruch rules that a davar shelo bala olam, a person who shelo bala olam, cannot be zocha. A person cannot be mezaka to an uber, to a fetus. However, the Shulchan Aruch explains that that's only true if it's not a man's own child, own fetus. If it's his own child, then he actually could be mezaka to that uber. The Nesivos explains that in fact an uber is a being that can be kona, but being that he's not visible in here, there is less kemiras das, and therefore if it's not one's own child, we say there's not complete conviction for the transfer to go through. If it's one's own child, then there is enough conviction and it works. There is a dispute whether that's only true for a person who is a shchiv mira to mezakit an uber, or even a bari, even a healthy person. Must he be on his deathbed, or even a healthy person? Both opinions are brought in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shach rules that any person can be mezakeh to an uber if it is his own child, male or female. Male or female if referring to the recipient. However, if the mezakeh is a mother, is a woman, she cannot be mezakeh to her uber, says the Mabit, quoted in the Piskei Teshuva. Kveger disagrees, quotes the Ma'ar Shach, that says even a mother can be mezakeh to an uber, and the Piskei Teshuva himself quotes a Shmus Yaakov that says that a mother can be mezakeh to her uber. So, l'cho'ora, regarding the Tzavo, it can be written to her son and to her fetus. Here's where our Gemara comes in. According to Tarkonis Usha, it shouldn't work. A woman who's married, all the assets that she acquired in the course of her marriage or that she brought in are hers. That is, she's able to, technically to sell them or to give them away, but only that part that she actually has, which is the keren, the peros, the usage of the item, belongs to the husband as soon as they get married. But if she were to sell those items, apparently the keren should be sold. Comes along Takonas Usha and says that we view the husband as a lokeach rishon. As soon as he gets married, it's considered as if he purchased those items. Therefore, not only does he get the rights to the peros, but he also has a right to the keren vis-a-vis if his wife were to sell or to give that to somebody else, he could void that transaction and say the lokeach or the mekabel matana should not acquire it because it's as if he already acquired it. She had no right to sell it or to give it away. Therefore, in our situation, if the mother had given a matana to her son and her fetus, and should she die first, the husband has a right to say that the woman's designated recipient did not receive it from the mother because he is a lokeach rishon and she had no right to give that to anybody else. And therefore, he in fact would be considered the true owner of the items. Should he have more children, they would be inheriting all of those assets that she had wanted to give to her son and fetus. The Shulchan Aruch does make a distinction between the Chosim HaYiduim Lebaal and the Chosim She'enem Yiduim Lebaal. That is, only those assets that the husband knows that his wife has, does he have the power to avoid her transaction, her sale, or her gift. If he wasn't aware of it, then he cannot void it. Although the Shulchan Aruch does rule that still she should not be giving them away. In any event, in this situation, it doesn't make a difference because the husband knew that she owned part of the house and therefore he should be able to void that transaction. The only way for this to work easily would be for her to notify her husband of her intentions and then if with her husband's permission she gives her son and her fetus her assets, she is also acting on behalf of her husband as his agent, and therefore it would be a valid transaction. But in this situation, it was not helpful because after mentioning this possibility, she said she doesn't want her husband to know about it at this stage. Hopefully she'll recover, and he may be concerned that she was thinking that he was going to transfer her assets to his other inheritors and not give it to her own children, even though that's what she wanted, and that would cause friction in the household. Takanas Usha would seem to prevent this woman from making certain that her assets should be given solely to her two children. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein in Igros Moshe Eben Ezer Simen Kuv Dalad raises a great chiddush, an original idea that does leave some room in some circumstances for her to go ahead and write a will. Rav Moshe explains, although a husband inherits all of the assets that his wife has at the time of her death, the rights that the husband has to void a gift or a sale of the wife's assets as through the power of Takonas Usha, that the husband has a din of a lokeach rishon, that is only if the husband has kavana to be kona. That means he needs to know of his rights to be able to void the sale or the gift of his wife, and he intends to act as a lokeach rishon. He intends to acquire them as if he got them and purchased them. This is how Rav Moshe understands the rule that we mentioned earlier. Nechosim she'enam yiduim lebal, he cannot void. If he did not know she had those assets, then he could not have kavana to acquire them. Hence, he could not void them later on as a lokeach rishon. What Rav Moshe does spend time explaining then is why the Shulchan Aruch rules that lechatchila she should not sell them. If he doesn't know about it and he did not acquire it, surely the carrion is entirely hers for her to sell. And Rav Moshe resolves that in his tshuva. Another interesting halacha that Rav Moshe explains with this is the concept of shtar mavrachas. A woman who has a lot of assets and wants to get married and doesn't want her husband to void or have control of those assets can do the following. She could transfer them over to somebody else with an invalid halachic contract, a shtar mavrachas, giving everything away to somebody else, but in fact it's not effective. The husband thinks it is effective, and being that he's fooled, he does not have kavana to be kona those things as a lokeach, and therefore even though she does bring that into the marriage, he cannot void her sale or gift later on because he never was kona them as a lokeach. Rav Moshe proves his chiddush from our Gemara. Amar Rav Man Limo. If a husband becomes a lokeach on his wife's assets that she inherited from her father, which were nichtzei hektish, the Gemara thinks, has a hafamina, that he is moel automatically even before he uses them. And the Gemara says, no, he's not moel. Tehetera nechale delikni, yisura lo nechale delikni. Explains Rav Moshe, he has no intention of becoming a lokeach on hektish, which is iser, only on heter. Apparently you need his kavana liknos. Rav Moshe applies it to the case that he had in front of him, where a woman received money after they were married. She put it into the bank account, her bank account, which is like a halva. She's lending it out to somebody else. And when she died, the husband does not acquire that as a yerusha, because it's roi, it's not. A husband that only acquires the Yerusha items which she actually has, the muksik, but not things that are coming to her. However, Takonas Usha should kick in here, where he became a lokeach rishon on that money, and therefore, even though it's roi, he should be able to void the halva, so to speak, and acquire that money back. Whenever a husband utilizes the power of Takonas Usha, whether it be a Mechira, or a Matana, or a Halva, the Shulchan Aruch rules that he doesn't have to pay anything. He just takes it right back, and doesn't owe anything to the new Lokeach. That explains Rav Moshe, according to his Chiddush, that can it be verified that the husband did not know of his rights from the time that he got married until the time that his wife died? He cannot become a lokeach to void a mechira, a matana, or a halva. Certainly in the situation he had at hand, where there was a secular will, although it may be halachically ineffective, that will, however, being that there was a secular system in place where the husband never thought that he would see that money, retrieve it, he therefore had no kavana to be kona it as a lokeach. And he therefore cannot void the halva. Applying Rav Moshe's chiddush to our situation, can it be verified that this woman's husband, from the time that he got married till the time that his wife died, was not aware of his right as a lokeach rishon to be able to void the matano or the mechira of his wife? Then in fact he was not a lokeach rishon, and he cannot say that I had already acquired that from the time that she received them, and he would not be able to void the tzavah, that his wife made towards her son and her fetus. But Moshe's Chiddush may not be universally accepted. I have not found his Chiddush mentioned in the other poskim, and it has such great application, it should be something that would be mentioned if it were widely accepted. Furthermore, I don't understand how Moshe can prove his point from this Gemara conclusively, because the Gemara continues to suggest that it's not the husband who is Moel, but perhaps Beis Din is Moel. By the mere fact that Beis Din allowed the husband to become a lokeach, automatically it's Beis Din's responsible for the Me'ilah taking place. The Gemara responds that no, that the Beis Din would not do it only for Heter. Ki altu rabbona takanto v'omru balo lokeachavi lehetera li'isura lo avin rabbona takanto. They did not make the takana for Iser. The implication for that stage of the Gemara is that regardless of whether the husband is interested in being a lokeach, it would work against his will. You don't need the husband to have kavana. So when Rava continues and says that the Me'ilah takes place, Baal Mal Lekishiyotzi, only when he uses it, not automatically, at that stage of the Gemara, how do we know that the Gemara understands that a Baal is a lokeach like it had originally thought, only when the Baal has kavano liknos? Maybe at that stage of the Gemara, it's going with the last thought that the Gemara had, that the Baal does not need kavana. It's working against his will. He's an automatic lokeach, whether he likes it or not. It's only up to the Beis Din to make the takana, the heter and not the iser. And if that's the case, in the maskana of the Gemara, the Moshe has no raya, apparently. So takanas usha is actually quite a relevant and practical halacha. It avoids many tzavos. According to Rav Moshe, there may be circumstances when this halacha of takanas usha can be bypassed and is not applicable.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To reach the center for halacha consultation, service, educational seminars, or media, please call 1-888-485-VAAD. That's 1-888-485-8223. To sign up to the BHHJ, the Beis Havad's weekly interactive e-journal, please visit www.bhhj.org, or you can email us at office@thehalachacenter.org.